This is the Inch Podcast, a production of InsideCollegeHockey.com. Now, let's send it to our podcast host, Joe Gladyszewski.
Hello, thanks for listening to the Inch Podcast, recorded Thursday, April 14th, 2011. And if you know that date and you know college hockey, you know the season's over. Congratulations to Minnesota Duluth, the 2011 NCAA Division I Men's Ice Hockey Champions. That probably sounds good to WCHA senior writer Jess Myers. He's on the podcast with us. Hello, Jess.
Hello, and I'll be honest, it still sounds weird. I mean, there's just moments where it hits you like, wow, did that really happen? But yeah, it does sound nice, and good tournament, and fun to have all of you here in the state of hockey, and we got plenty to talk about.
Yep, we'll get right to some Frozen Four reflections also on the podcast tonight. Inch editor Mike Idlebus. Hi, Bus.
The college hockey season is not over until we decide it is.
There you go.
So it's over after this podcast.
Yeah. Yes. So enjoy the podcast.
And yeah, it's got about another hour.
No, that's not necessarily true. We'll have our typical off-season coverage. Maybe the old 10 for 12 will make an appearance.
It will.
Some more podcasts throughout the Stanley Cup playoffs where we can give some ex-collegians some shout-out. And
I know we'll talk about the playoffs later, but you know we're 2 days in, and it's already been pretty good.
Yeah, I'll take the under in every game. we'll have draft coverage. We'll have A to Z. We got a lot of stuff going on.
And the road team, if you're betting in the East.
Yeah. And we'll get to Stanley Cup playoffs as part of our deterioration segment, but let's get back to the Frozen Four. Jess, coming from the East, so to speak, and just overwhelmed at the event. I thought it was of the 11 Frozen Fours I've been to, certainly among the top three that were my favorites. Rink was good, games were good, fans were good, the weather was great, people were able to do things before and after the games. Social aspects were great, as always. Shout out to our friends at Campus Pizza in Minneapolis, of course. And let's just get back to the games, though. Let's start with the final. A good game, a close game, and an exciting game. Of course, Minnesota Duluth 3, Michigan 2 in overtime. And they got, both teams, kind of did enough to put themselves in a position, but I think at the end of the day, we'll probably look back and say there was a lot more we could have done. Minnesota Duluth will say we found a way in the end. Michigan will probably regret some of its decision-making, misplays, and inability to finish scoring chances.
Michigan definitely deserves credit for a couple things. Number one, goaltending. I mean, their goalie was the best goalie in the tournament and very deserving to be on the all-tournament team and, held them in both games where they were outshot by a significant margin. So, Hunwick and I don't see Michigan a lot, so I didn't follow him all season, but, kind of taking over from Brian Hogan at some point in the year and obviously on the biggest stage, turning it up when he had to. The other thing I really want to credit Michigan for is their penalty kill, especially in that final game, to hold that UMD power play to as few, I think one goal and just as few chances as they even had, despite the number of penalties Michigan took in that game. And Red Berenson alluded to that after the game a little bit, talking about, how he can't say what he really feels about the calls and stuff. I didn't see a lot of really questionable calls in that game either way. There were a couple, but not a lot. So those are the two things I'll say about Michigan, at least, is they played very well in goal, and the penalty kill was very good.
Bus, on the Minnesota Duluth side of things, what did you see from the Bulldogs? I think a certain website named Inside College Hockey wrote about their second line.
Yeah, go figure. We look pretty good now, don't we?
A little bit.
A little bit. And we, obviously that was something that we really focused on going into the Frozen Four was you know you're going to get some production from that first line of Jack Conley, Mike Conley, and Justin Fontaine. It was whether that second line and other guys could pick up the slack and kind of fill in the cracks when it came to offense. And you know, that was obviously apparent in both games, really. You know, especially the championship game, where that, you know, that line of Schmidt and Brown and Oleksik was their best line, and you know, they got goals from other guys. I mean, you get Max Tardy, who gets his first career goal on the power play, no less. Scott Sandlin talked a little bit in the post game comments about why you had a freshman with zero goals on the power plays, but you know, still it's a little bit of a head scratcher. But hey, you know, it worked for them. And
those are the kind of bold decisions that win you national championships, right there.
Right, exactly. You know,
you knew he was due or something.
Yeah, like that. Exactly. He was like a slot machine ready to pay out. So. And Kenny Ryder was not spectacular, but he was good enough. And I think that, and I think another key for Duluth, especially when in the championship game, you know, their defense against North Dakota or against Notre Dame did not have a very good day, and they were a lot better against Michigan, and they had to be.
Yes, I agree with that. And if you look at the entire tournament, you know, Kenny Ryder was his best when he needed to be, which was that first, you know, period against Union. And then right. That was, you know, the first period of the tournament for any of the teams involved. So, you know, if he had played like he played in the first period against Notre Dame, when both goalies struggled, both he and Johnson, it's a whole different tournament, I think, but
yeah, they may be out.
That's how you win this thing. You know, you get guys to have a big goal at the right time. You know, if it's Tardy getting his first goal, guys like Ben Winnett, you know, of Michigan had two goals on the Frozen Four weekend, his fourth and fifth of the season. You know, and then guys make plays, you know, at the right time and kind of pick each other up. So. That's one of the deals, and that's how you win this thing. Four unique and separate, distinct games, but you win four of them, you get a trophy.
You know, it's interesting to note, too, before the tournament, I mean, before the playoffs even started, I sat down and talked to Don Lucia for a story I did that was in the Frozen Four game program about the 2002 championship game that Minnesota had beaten Maine. I talked to Tim Whitehead at length, too. You know, very interesting interviews with both of them. But Lucia made the comment to me that he said it seems like you never win it with your best team. You know, if you're fortunate enough and talented enough as a coach to coach a national championship team, it's never necessarily your best 20 skaters that do it. And, you know, he talked about that 2002 team and all the breaks they got along the line that, you know, if you think back to that year, Denver had won the WCHA that year. Denver won the WCHA Final Five that year. That Denver team was absolutely loaded. That season, and you know, then gets knocked off by Michigan in the tournament, and opens the door for Minnesota. And I think you saw some of that as well this year. I mean, obviously with North Dakota, which had given so many guys fits on Minnesota Duluth's team this year. You know, I think the Sioux were 2-1 against the Bulldogs, and you know, came into Amsoil Arena for the opening and just handed UMD its lunch. You know, 5-0 game. They get knocked off. You know, UMD in November in Thanksgiving. You know, that time of year looked like the best team in the country. You know, we had them ranked number one. Everybody had them ranked number one. Then they start to, you know, run into some stuff. Dylan Olsen leaves at midseason, which at the time looked like a pretty big loss, and that's coming off of, you know, having lost Rob Bordson at the end of last season after a great, great year he had. So they had some holes to fill and, you know, weren't looking like a great team. You know, if you want to go back to the podcast going into the NCAA tournament, I said I didn't have confidence in their goaltending. And like you said, Joe, in that first period against Union kind of set the tone for things that it was going to be different somehow.
And it was. And that was a great run. Let's transition a little bit. Bus, any other points on the final?
Well, I think just, you know, overall looking at the tournament, you know, and one of the themes that seemed to emerge this year, especially after the Michigan-North Dakota game, was Red Berenson ironically saying that, you know, the best team doesn't always win. And I think that's true. I think most people would admit that from top to bottom that UMD was not the best team in the country. But I think that one point that has kind of that has become evident in watching this tournament this year especially is that it's maybe not even playing the complete 60 minutes or being the best team over 60 minutes, but being the best team and getting the best performances at key points in the game. You know, you talk about you know, Ryder's first period against Union. Talk about Hunwick against North Dakota, yeah. You know, maybe in the second period or even the third period. You know, it seems to be about who in years like this. And I think last year, obviously, I think we can say that, you know, Boston College, if they weren't the best team, they were probably number two. The year before that, BU was obviously the best team. And, you know, even when you go to the year before that, I don't think in Denver in 2008, Boston College probably wasn't the best team. I think Michigan probably was the best. But they had a lousy first period, case in point, you know.
Yep.
They got outplayed and then they got bounced. So, you know, it's less about who's the best team over the four games, but it seems to be who performs the best over these key segments of these games. And it certainly makes for an interesting championship, that's for sure.
Yeah, you know, they don't ask you to play seven-game series in this tournament, so you can do a lot just being good at the right time, as you said.
There's another thing I want to bring up about the tournament as a whole, and I think I think you guys would probably agree that I don't think the Frozen Four as a whole, those three games in St. Paul, they may have not been the most well played games. You know, we saw some turnovers, we saw you know, maybe some passes that weren't as crisp as they should have been. We obviously saw some shaky goaltending, most notably in that first game on Thursday. But they were entertaining, you know, which I think was a big difference between this year and last year, obviously. And, you know, I think from a fan's perspective, I think most people can overlook some of those mistakes we saw. You know, obviously in our piece following the championship game, we talked a lot about Michigan having a lot of bad turnovers, ultimately the one that cost them. But, you know, that doesn't mean it wasn't entertaining. And I think from a fan's perspective, that's probably more important.
Yeah, I was going to transition a little bit. And something we said at the tournament was that everything that Michigan did right against North Dakota, and I think that game was played at a pretty high level.
Yeah, I agree.
That one.
Although there was one pass that was maybe ill-advised that didn't end up hurting them.
But. Yeah, no kidding. No kidding. But, you know, Michigan did a lot of those little things right against North Dakota, whether it was blocking shots, certainly defending rebound areas. You know, Hunwick was great with rebound control, but even when he wasn't, Michigan was there to prevent second chance opportunities, you know, and they were good at both lines, both blue lines. And against Minnesota Duluth, they struggled on Saturday night with that. So,
yep.
That was that. Speaking of excitement,
you talk about defense too. Let me just add this: that, you know, one thing I saw from UMD's defense is when they saw, and you know, that first Michigan goal probably wasn't a great goal. goalie might have been screened, but, you know, all of a sudden you're down 1-0. UMD's defense really took it upon themselves to block shots in a lot of cases, I noticed. You know, and just the easiest way to help out your goalie is just don't let the puck get to him. So I think, you know, guys, especially like Mike Montgomery, with such a huge presence back there, deserves some credit for that.
He's a good player. I like his game.
Plus, I tweeted this with that dyed blonde hair. Look at him, and then look at the guy who plays Thor in the new movie coming out. Dead ringers. It's kind of uncanny.
All right.
I would like to amend your statement, though.
Sure.
It is the easiest way to help your goalie is by not letting the shots get to him. But if the shot's gonna get to him, for the love of Pete, let him see it.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Well, Jack Connolly got out of the way on that second one that was scored. When that puck hit him and he crumpled to the ice, that was the best comment I got after the game. I said, "Where'd that puck hit you?" And there was his pause. He said, "In a bad spot."
Justin Falk.
Yeah.
Couple.
He makes a better door than a window.
Yes.
As my dad would say.
There you go.
Falk was an interesting one, too, after the game. Just quickly, you know, I asked him about, you know, what was it like to play Michigan in the final, having played in Ann Arbor for the NDTP team, you know, and he said, hey, you get to know everything about them, you know, going to Pioneer High School right across the street from Michigan Stadium, and he said, you know, that was just kind of a nice little added bonus to winning a national championship, was getting to do it against a team he had gotten to know so well.
Well, there you go. Any other thoughts on the Frozen Four weekend and the hockey itself? Good.
I think we're good.
Not that I mean, unless you want to. I don't know if you want to add North Dakota to the mix.
Yeah, I mean, you know, if they played 7-game series, North Dakota wins that thing. Yeah. I have no doubt in my mind that that's the case.
No.
I think Michigan did a pretty good job against them in limiting chances, but I thought they would have more firepower, you know, kind of throw things a little more helter-skelter and maybe play with a little more sense of urgency and desperation. But I think that's the curse of being the best team, is that, right, you know, you don't get out of what you do well because you trust it, and look where it's gotten you, you know? So it's the dilemma is such that, you know, you trust it and you keep rolling lines and, you know, you keep doing the little things, and then, you know, you try not to get individual, you know, players making individual type plays, trying to be that game breaker. And they've got a lot of guys who can be that guy. But Michigan was just right on top of its game. The mental aspect, the goaltending aspect, and the smart decision making and execution of those decisions. So,
yeah,
I talked about Michigan's penalty kill a little bit against UMD. I've got to credit, you know, and this probably falls to guys like Billy Powers and Mel Pearson to do the scouting, but it looked to me in that North Dakota game like Michigan had done an incredible job of scouting North Dakota's power play and taking them out of, you know, things like their ability to get the goalie moving laterally, which had worked so well for the Sioux all season.
Yeah, Michigan did a nice job in the low slot, I think, both nights. And that's where, as you said, North Dakota likes to make that seam pass, and I've seen it a lot, you know, over the year on TV. And then Minnesota Duluth generates a lot right from the bottom of the circles there. They love posting up those two guys on each yeah. side of the net. And, you know, and the tardy goal was kind of that play. You know, he was trying to go far post, and the defenseman stuck his stick out. Hunwick was caught moving, and it fell right back to Tardy's forehand. So, yeah, they were well prepared and certainly did a nice job with that. I agree, Jess.
You know, here's the interesting thing about Michigan, too, and their approach to that game against North Dakota. And as that game progressed, I don't know what you guys were thinking, but I'm thinking, okay, if North Dakota can't get a get a pretty goal. They're going to get a dirty goal. You know, somebody driving to the net and, you know, getting a tip and or getting a rebound or somehow they're going to find a way to score. And that didn't happen either. And certainly North Dakota has those kind of guys on its roster who can score those kind of goals. But Michigan took both of those options away, really, with the same game plan.
Yeah, they really did. So
the North Dakota locker room that I had to walk into after that game, wow. I've been to funerals that were more fun.
You are the angel of death on the interstate.
That's right. But no, that was just, I mean, you talk about a team that not only, you know, the reality had sunk in on and that it was all over, but, you know, nobody was prepared for that. I mean, I just think that was a team playing with so much confidence and, you know, not that they took Michigan lightly or anything like that. I just think, you know, they were just stunned.
Well, they expected to win.
Yep.
And I don't think that was a statement of, or a matter of them being, like you said, overconfident or cocky or, you know, just expecting to show up and, you know, have Michigan lay their sticks on the ice and say, okay, go ahead, it's your game. But, you know, they've played with that kind of confidence all year. And, you know, up until last Thursday, they had no reason to believe that it wasn't going to work for them because it has worked for them, you know, pretty much every time out. So,
and, you know, and they played a sloppy first period. I mean, they all admitted that and got down 1-0. But beyond that point, the Sioux were doing the things that they'd been doing all season with success. And all of a sudden, it just wasn't working. You know, pucks weren't going in. The goalie wasn't leaving half the net open, you know, after a nice play down low. All this stuff that had just clicked for him wasn't there. And I think that was the biggest thing to deal with. And, you know, even after the game, it was just like, how did that happen? You know, how did it just not work this time?
Yeah.
Gladie, I'm going to throw this one back to you, and I'm not sure if there's an answer or not, but do you think that loss exposed North Dakota as having a weakness?
No, I don't. I think maybe, again, without having spoken to their coaching staff directly, just strictly from my own observations, maybe the weakness is adaptability. If you're doing the same thing for 45, 50 minutes and it hasn't worked yet, can you try something else? But again, as I stated earlier, you know, you got to, you know, dance with the one that brought you, as they say. And
Is that like run what you brung?
It's exactly like that.
All right.
Run what you brung.
Run what you brung. Okay.
So, you know, so that would be the only concern for me. You know, I think their defensive foot speed is a physical flaw, but, you know, they know how to adjust to that, and not a lot of teams can expose that, primarily because when you're playing against North Dakota, not a lot of teams have the puck very much.
Exactly.
So, good team, you know. I think, you know, as we said in the beginning of the year and throughout the year, you know, they were pretty much what we thought to be the best team or among the top two or three teams. And they're good, man. They're a good club.
Amazing to think back now, and this thought just struck me. I mean, the one thing I thought about going into this tournament is what a great collection of coaching talent. And the thought just struck me now of those four coaches now, you know, despite the program he leads, Dave Haxtell is the only one who hasn't won a national title.
Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah. You know, and that's not a rip on North Dakota or anything. I mean, obviously,
oh, yes, it's
great,
just
great. No, I mean, it's just not. Kidding. But, you know, great program and great talent. And if you believe some of the poll voters, they were the best team in the country this year, even after the tournament was over. But, that's interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, well, whatever. So it's good. Good stuff. Andy Mealy went home with a trophy, even though his Miami Redhawks did not play at the Frozen Four. The 2010-11 Hobie Baker winner out of Miami. You know, on our last podcast, we talked more at length about the Hobie finalists. And, you know, it was just one of those – we kind of had the feeling that's how it would go, and that's how it went. Very deserving. Very deserving. And, again, as we've said, that doesn't mean other finalists were less deserving. It was just that Mealy kind of had the whole package right there, and he got the Hobie. I can't find any fault with that decision.
No, and no, congratulations to Andy. I mean, great player, obviously, and you know, for those of us who didn't get to see him on a as regular a basis, I mean, once you look at the highlights and you read about this kid, we were blown away. I mean, he just the, like you say, the total package with the off ice stuff and the on ice stuff was very good. And I've got to say this, I mentioned in the last podcast that I would be bothered if there were boos for him, and there were none. There was a very sincere standing ovation from all the fans in attendance, and that was really nice.
Boss?
Yeah, I think we would be remiss if we do not salute the North Dakota fans who were in attendance. And in talking with the North Dakota Sports Information Director, Jason Hadjidou, after the championship game, he made a great point. He said, you know what, without North Dakota fans, you know, you would have been able to hear crickets chirping at that Hobie ceremony.
True.
Yeah.
And he said the same thing about the WCHA Final Five, you know, which I know this seems like ancient history now, but there was no Minnesota, no Wisconsin there. Barely Minnesota Duluth there. Yeah. No St. Cloud.
They were there for a couple hours.
Yeah.
bowed out on Thursday afternoon quietly.
But it was...
they had Friday morning, you know, classes.
Yeah. I mean, current events quiz.
No, I mean, North Dakota is, as far as traveling fans, what Wisconsin was 20 years ago. I mean, everybody raved about Wisconsin fans and how well they traveled, and the North Dakota fan base has become that, and they really do add something. And to their credit, too, there were a lot of them still there for the championship game on Saturday, which was really nice. You know, it's not one of those fan bases where if they lose on Thursday, you never see them again. I mean, a lot of them stuck around for the long haul.
Yep.
So certainly they'd stick tap to them, certainly, for making the Hobie event a lot better than it could have been.
I was sitting in the stands, and I counted 7 people in Miami jerseys, and they were all sitting together. So I hope that was the Mealy extended family or something, but not a huge Miami contingent there to see their boy win the Hobie.
Yeah.
Well, we've always said that you don't leave Oxford unless you have a really good reason.
That's a good point.
In this case, they figured he'll bring the trophy back. We'll see it eventually.
It's on TV. And it's only a half an hour.
Hey, that's Clay Matvick, they said.
Speaking of fans and saluting them, got to thank all the fans of Inch that we got to meet and talk hockey with during the week, especially all the dedicated podcast listeners. We knew it was a pretty popular deal, but man, what an honor to hear from those people, and certainly appreciate the kind words they had for us. And
we learned a little something about ourselves.
Oh man. Don't we always?
Well, yeah, I'm just saying we didn't realize that that some people held us in such high esteem.
Yeah. Yeah. The bar has been raised for the Inch podcast.
So yeah, we'll pick that bar right up off the ground. Yep.
Wow.
Now too bad if James was here. James V. Dowd, he would be able to, you know, elaborate a little bit, since the core group of fanatics that we met were Michigan people, surprisingly.
Yeah.
I never pegged the Michigan crowd as hardcore podcast people, but know, we found a few that were, so.
Also had the pleasure to stop by a pregame tailgate and talk some hockey with Mark Fritchie. And, I mean, you talk about capturing the spirit, Bus. We mentioned it in our, in our first shift stick salute for the early semifinal. But, you know, you and I are sitting there at, what, I guess 1 p.m. before
3 hours before face-off on Thursday.
And not even the timing of it, but just what did we count? 9, 10 different schools' sweaters represented among a group of about 20?
Yeah, there was probably, what would you say, 20-some, maybe 20, 22 people there. And, of course, you know, there was a Gophers sweater. There was a Wisconsin one.
Minnesota
Tech,
State, St. Cloud, Michigan Tech, North Dakota.
North Dakota. There was a UNH in there.
UNH, that's right.
The Wheeling Nailers.
Yeah. Lots of different stuff.
I'm trying to think if there was, I think that pretty much, was there a Bulldog? There must have been a Bulldog.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Yeah, there was. About the only ones that were missing, at least from the WCHA, were Denver and CC. I don't think there was any Anchorage. Oh, was there an Anchorage person there?
No. We had an Omaha, though, in the bunch.
Yeah. And
Omaz.
We have a Bemidji.
Not sure. But the point is, heck of a job. And as we were walking toward the rink from there, you know, Bus and I kind of realizing that is the spirit of the thing. He goes, makes me not want to work.
Well, we also heard the rarely heard third alternate verse to the Michigan fight song.
Yes.
And this is a family podcast, so we can't repeat it, right?
No, pretty much stays there. Yeah.
Good to know.
It's probably on the interweb someplace if you...
It had the word circle in it.
And the word auto worker.
Yes. So.
Oh, I have not heard that one.
It's terrific.
We'll have to discuss that in off-air overtime.
Yeah.
Inch overtime.
Hockey Night in Canada after hours.
Yeah. That's right.
That part of the podcast will be behind a paywall.
Yeah. Big time.
I got to add, too, on Thursday, I wasn't able to make it over to the tailgate. I did, however, join you guys at a little gathering of the folks from Tampa, and I know we're still 51 weeks away, but, you know, when you walk into a room and you see, you know, Tom Curvers and Dave Andrechuk and some real hockey guys that have ties to Tampa, it makes you think, yeah, sure, it's Florida, but I think they're going to do all right with this one.
Yeah, thanks to the folks from the Tampa St. Pete Planning Committee and the tournament host group. Looking forward to that. And, you know, that was the one I said, you know, in the earliest days of Inch. You know, I had gone down there to vacation a little bit and had been to a few Frozen Fours at that point, and walked into the rink with my dad, and the outside of the rink was great, great patio plaza area before the game, which will certainly be hopping when the Frozen descends on the town, and then you get in the building, and it's a pretty nice building. I said, turn to my father, I said, Dad, we got to have a Frozen here. And then 10 years later, here it is.
There you go. Also, we need to that. Yeah, and, you know, Huntsville's the host, Alabama Huntsville.
Yep.
And I think they'll do a great job. The other... But I think one thing we need to do is nip this in the bud right now. I heard some other people, this was in the press box, talking about the Tampa as a host site. And a media person made the comment, oh, it's going to be a disaster. And, you know, it's going to be terrible. And they should just have it in St. Paul again next year. I think it's going to be a really good site. Yeah, exactly. So, that's exactly right. I mean, you have to be open-minded about it. But, that said, I mean, I think it's going to be a pretty good spot. I think the teams will be excited to play there. I think the, I think the fans, at least the ones that we've talked to, are excited to go there. And I think it's going to be a good time. And I think, like we talked among ourselves, I think a lot of people are going to go down there and make a little vacation out of it, and, you know, instead of taking 4 or 5 days or coming in on the Tuesday night or the Wednesday morning, they're going to come in on a Saturday, you know, and spend, you know, a week or 8 days down there, and it's going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah, that will be a good one. That will be a good one. So
I just have to give one last shout out to the folks who organized the tournament in St. Paul. A couple nice touches they added just for fans that I really thought were successful. The fan fest they had on Saturday, where they blocked off, you know, a couple blocks of downtown St. Paul, had live music and food and, you know, all kinds of fun stuff outside. That added a really nice touch before the championship game and after the championship game as well. And then I don't know that anybody has done this before, but they did these red carpet arrivals where they had the team bus pull up and the bands were there, and you know, fans could line both sides of the entrance to the rink and give the teams high fives on the way in. That was really a neat touch, especially before the championship game. I mean, it really added a kind of sense of anticipation to have, you know, both teams' fans there and the bands and a fun atmosphere. So good work with both of those elements.
Yeah, I agree. That was a good one.
Yeah, I even kind of enjoyed listening to Hail to the Victors the first time. By the 78th listening, I was a little soured on it, but well, whatever.
They sure know that song. And I didn't go upstairs on Friday when they were having the autograph sessions too with both teams. And I'm not sure if that's something they've done in the past or not. I, off the top of my head, I want to say they didn't. But, you know, I could be completely wrong about that. But you're right. Nice little touches to get fans involved.
They had the autograph session, and then after the Hobie ceremonies, they had a skating party where you could actually go down on the rink and...
Yeah, open skate.
And skate. Now, I don't want to put any pressure on the folks from Tampa, but I heard a rumor for next year. Now, if you think Tampa's going to be a disaster and you're thinking of not coming, let me just throw this out there. Because the rumor that they floated, and again, we're 51 weeks away, things could change. But the idea
hold on. Where was this rumor floated?
It was floated by some folks at the Tampa Gathering.
Okay, continue.
Okay, they'll have the Hobie ceremony and that, and then instead of a skating party, you know, you've been to Tampa, Joe. They have that big outdoor kind of gathering
plaza
spot.
Patio. Yeah.
Plaza, yeah. You can fit a lot of people in there.
Yeah, a lot.
The rumor is there will be an outdoor Jimmy Buffett concert. Free and open to the fans after the Hobie. And now when you think hockey, you think Jimmy Buffett. But hey, no, I'm just saying.
There you do.
There you do.
That's a big ask. But yeah. if that rumor was out there, then it's out there.
Yeah.
I also heard a rumor that at the open skate in St. Paul that Chuck Fletcher actually signed a couple people to contracts. I don't know if that's true or not, but that's just what I heard.
One of them was Che Genaway, so that wasn't a bad signing.
I don't think he was at the open skate.
No, he probably wasn't. Matt Fratton might have been there. He might have actually been heading back to Grand Forks to get his passport by that point.
Yeah, he gone. He was in Toronto. Everything we heard, he played very well Saturday in his Toronto Maple Leaf debut.
Yes.
Did not. Obviously, no. we were watching another game at that time. But
And now he's back getting Grand Forks, perhaps.
Yeah.
No Marlies to play for.
I think he'll have a nice NHL career.
Yeah, he's a good player.
Good player, and he's got size where he can, you know, be gritty in front and do a lot of the stuff that made him successful as a college player will translate to the NHL level.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. I think that probably puts the bow on the Frozen.
Yeah, anything else season-wide or next season? Or?
Not that I want to bring up right now.
Yeah, we'll have another podcast.
I want to keep something in the back pocket for later. Yeah. We've got a couple coaches that we need to hire yet, and the draft is coming up, and
yeah, we're right back here in St. Paul, by the way. So feel free to come back.
Absolutely. Y'all come back now. You hear?
Correct.
And I guess theoretically, well, there's, you know, we talked about this a little bit before we started the podcast. There's three job openings right now: Providence, Lowell, and Michigan Tech. I guess you kind of could throw Penn State in there.
Yep.
They gotta be looking in that direction.
Yeah.
In the very near future.
Yep. October 7th and 8th, by the way. Next season starts.
That's the icebreaker?
Icebreaker in Grand Forks, North Dakota. The Sioux hosting the event with Boston College, Michigan State, and Air Force.
You may be corrected there, by the way. Because you what? Said the Sioux are hosting the event.
Oh.
And we don't know if by October 7th they will still be the Sioux. That's to be determined.
All right. It was correct as I spoke it in the time
frame it was.
In which I spoke it.
Gotcha on a technicality, sorry.
His mama called him Clay. I'm going to call him Clay.
Clay Wilson?
Coming to America, ladies and gentlemen. Not Clay Wilson, but and speaking of wild scouring the earth for talent, one of your guys got called up last week.
Yeah, yeah.
An extra little extra dash of spice on the weekend for you.
Yeah, I was happy. I mean, for me to say the following sentence, and here it goes, I enjoyed watching the Wild game that Friday night. We were gathering with some friends and associates at our annual shindig, and the TVs inside of Campus Pizza were showing the Wild game, and I think, Bus, you were the first.
Yeah, I was.
You pointed out Bagnell 42 is out there, Drew Bagnell, former St. Lawrence defenseman, and as we have discussed in the past, the so-called discovering of talent, but, you know, guys we've been in on early. Bagnell was certainly one of those guys for me. Loved him, his college career at St. Lawrence, and made his NHL debut that night, and apparently played pretty well. I got to see some of his third period shifts, but not much of it.
Had a little dust up.
Yeah, he was involved. It was against the Oilers, so good stuff.
I can't remember who he was. It wasn't a full-fledged fight, just a little
scrape at the...
Yeah, a little fracas. I think it was a European guy. I don't remember.
If it was the Oilers, what are the odds it was a college guy?
Very good.
Yeah. They are NCAA North.
Actually, it might have been Cogliano, but I'm not... I don't remember. Had a lot of things going through my head that night.
Yes. Yes, there were.
Some going in them.
Yeah, things going in my head that night.
Yeah. All right. Natural transition to the Stanley Cup playoffs.
Yeah, we've talked about the Wild, so that must mean Edmonton, it's time to talk Edmonton, playoffs.
Edmonton Oilers and Wild, so
Stanley Cup playoffs underway. Number one seeds in each conference, Gladi Bowl, Vancouver in the West, Washington in the East. Both teams won their opening games of their series Wednesday night.
You talk about the team that has the college guys, Chicago. Well, Vancouver and Chicago. Chicago's got a ton.
There's a lot of them out there.
Nick Leddy was in the lineup last night for them. Obviously, they've got Taves and Duncan Keith and Sharp and Jake Dowell's out there. And
Yeah, you said Duncan Keith.
Victor Stahlberg.
Yep.
I'm sure there's one. Now, the Blackhawks have Ryan Johnson. Is that the North Dakota Ryan Johnson, the one that used to play for the is that the one that played for Vancouver?
I believe so.
I think so, too.
Yeah, I think that's the one.
I'll have to look that up.
Well, and since we're talking about college guys, how about the former Boston College star scoring both goals against the Bruins in the opener of their series with Montreal, Brian Gionta, who...
In Boston.
In Boston. Welcome home for the little guy.
Your guy, boss, Ben Smith.
Yeah, Ben, I forgot about Ben Smith. Yeah, he played last night. And of course, on the flip side, on Vancouver, you've got Kessler and
Keith Higgins Ballard.
And Keith Ballard and Bieksa.
Bieksa, Tanner Glass,
Kessler, Glass, Raymond.
Yep.
Pereskovich, who played about 40 games with Notre Dame. boy, that Bieksa. Who would have seen that coming?
Nobody.
That guy is something else.
He's a good player. He's a good player. What do you guys think? Vancouver? Are they the favorite? Who's your favorite right now? If you had to pick one.
I liked what I saw from them last night. Yeah. At least in the first period.
Yeah.
Did you watch the game?
I did.
Second, I think Vancouver's got to be, the team to beat. Sorry.
The first period, I thought we were actually chatting about it a little bit while it was going on. It was like they were ready to win the series all in one night.
Yeah. I think the perseverance and being able to hold on in the third, when it was still pretty close, and that to me is something that they haven't done in the past two seasons against Chicago especially.
Yeah.
Luongo
was good.
They haven't responded to that pressure and adversity like you might expect them to for a team that has been pretty good for a good long time now. But you got to learn to win, and that might be the case with Washington too. Some of the personnel has changed. I think the addition of Arnett was a really good move for them. A guy who's won the thing, and he came in right away, and he wasn't a wallflower.
No.
He came in right away and got in guys' faces and told them what he thought, so.
I think I was reading something about him. It might have been Elliot Friedman's articles on his 30 thoughts on cbc.ca on their hockey page. And if you don't know who Elliot Friedman is, he's a ringside reporter for Hockey Night in Canada. Does a great job. Really good, really, really good reporter. And he was talking about Arnott's, I think, first game in Washington, and they were kind of giving it the typical Washington defensive effort. And he's like, he turned to somebody, he's like, "You guys always play like this?"
Yeah.
And then somebody's
going to have to change.
Yeah, exactly. And then, a little further on in the piece, he said, or actually in the note following, he said, one more thing about Arnott. When he, not only when he talks, everybody listens. And he said, Ovechkin, he has Ovechkin's ear. But more importantly, he's got Semin's ear.
That's important.
Which I don't think anybody's had since he showed up.
Fedorov.
No, you're right, Fedorov.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good team, too.
Yeah, I like their makeup. They can just get a little healthier on defense.
Yeah.
They'll be tough.
What, Dark Horse pick? Jess, anything?
Oh, sorry.
Well, no, the only thing I was going to say about Vancouver, I mean, I really think they're the most talented team in the league, but I got to credit our friend Joe Ford for bringing up the travel aspect. And I do think that's something you've got to consider. I mean, I think all the way back to like the 93 finals when the Kings were playing Montreal and the Kings had to do all that traveling This is from a guy who covers Alaska Anchorage. That does wear on you after a while. So if you're Vancouver, hope for a second round series against somebody in California, and then maybe a third round series against
the other team in California.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, if you end up going, I guess it'll be Chicago this round.
I'm going to Nashville.
Then
Nashville,
you get the most likely, and
And then by the time if you do get to the finals, right? By the time you do get to the finals, then you're looking at going to potentially Washington or Montreal or Boston. I mean,
Buffalo.
That is a factor that I think needs to be considered.
Yeah, that is definitely part of it.
Well, think about back in '93. In the Western Conference Final was Kings Toronto.
Yeah, exactly.
and then they have to come right back and play Kings, play Montreal in the final.
Right.
Well, and if you recall, that Toronto series went to 7 games, so that was.
Oh yeah.
If you're the Kings, that was 3 trips to the East Coast in one series.
That might be the best series I've ever seen.
Yeah, that one was unbelievable.
Yep. And Canadians still lament it to this day because we were that close to a Toronto-Montreal final.
Oh, I know.
Oh. Just think if that happened. I mean, that would have been Armageddon back then. Just think if it would happen now.
Wow. Remember Felix Potvin? Remember how good he was for a little while there?
Yeah, he had a nice run. Yeah, that was a great series.
Some jerk from Brantford scored a hat trick.
Brent Gretzky?
Nope.
He probably scored one. It was just for the Port Huron flags.
Some guy with one side of his sweater tucked in.
He had Mario Lemieux's number on upside down.
Yeah.
All right.
Who's your dark horse?
My dark horse?
Yeah. I mean, are we picking the... Since Inch always picks the number one seeds, I'm assuming we're all picking Vancouver and Washington.
Jess, what are your thoughts?
My dark horse and...
Oh, who'd you take for the cup finals? Which team beats which team? And then give me your dark horse.
I think... boy. I will say Vancouver beats Montreal.
There's your dark horse.
In an All-Canada final. But I think the team that's going to maybe go deeper than people expect is Buffalo. I just really like that team. Don't think they can get to the finals, but I'm a Buffalo believer. And we talk about ex-collegians. They've got a pretty good guy in goal that played some college hockey.
He's all right.
Yeah, he's all right.
So, yeah, that's kind of your double dark horse. So you see a Habs Sabres conference final, perhaps?
Yeah, that would be that
depending
would be
on
great.
How the seeding falls. Yeah, you know what? It's impossible that they would play each other.
Yeah, that would be
unless
great.
Unless the Rangers win. You have to.
I mean, I would love it to see San Jose finally do something, but you've fooled me too many times. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I just and I guess you could make that argument about the Canucks as well, but something's got to give this year.
Yeah. I'll go chalk. Canucks over Caps. With, again, Buffalo as my dark horse.
I like it.
Well, no, you know what? That wouldn't work, because they'd play the Caps in the second round. Maybe get that series to 7 games? Is that good enough dark horse?
Yeah,
Let me ask you guys this, too. So we're one game in, but I was pretty
impressed. Here's my dark horse.
Go ahead.
Give me the Ducks. And I know they lost last night.
Well, that's what I was going to ask. Is Nashville for real? I mean, what do you guys
know. Think? I don't know.
We're one game in, and they look very good. And granted, Anaheim stood around a lot in that first game.
Yeah. I just can't. I mean, I think Nashville, they've got some good defensemen. There's no question about that. And I think Rennie is good. But, did Ellis play last night for Anaheim?
For a little while.
Because I don't know if...
Then Ray M.F. Emery came in.
if they could get... I'd feel better about Anaheim if they had Hiller in there.
Yeah, that's a big loss. It's a big loss.
But if, you know, if the if Perry and Getzlaf vertigo? And yeah. Yes.
Oh man. Anybody out there who's had vertigo? That is no fun. Man, I
Lucille too.
Oh. What's that?
Lucille too. It's a TV me making a pop culture reference. Put that in the
Lucille too. Oh, I got it. I got it. Took me a minute. Arrested Development. Good call. Good call.
But if they get Ryan going and Perry and Getzlaf and Solani and you know those guys going, you know they can flip that thing right around.
Yeah.
I like that pick as a dark horse.
As we record this, and I look over my shoulder here in the Ithaca Bureau of Inside College Hockey World Headquarters, San Jose and LA are playing right now. That's a series to watch. I don't know who's going to win, but all those games will be good. What's the score right now? Let's do another live score on the podcast.
Yep. Let's do a live score update.
7:40 left in the second period. San Jose 2, LA 1. LA had tied the score one way. Well, San Jose scored in the first minute of the game by Danny Heatley, Badgers.
You should find that YouTube video of Heatley.
LA tied it up with a goal by
Matt Green.
Ithaca's Dustin Brown.
Oh.
Townie, captain.
And then San Jose took the lead on a goal by
Logan Couture. Was it?
Oh, I was hoping it was the Polish Prince.
A little bit of a softie from ex-UMass standout John Quick. They just need to tell him he's playing Clarkson. He'll be unbelievable.
They need to tell him that all your fantasy points are in the shark
in the balance. San Jose obviously sent Steve Zaleski down. He didn't want him anywhere around. In case John Quick got a look at him.
You.
I know you.
I'm going to take the Kings as my dark horse.
Yeah. I would if they had Kopitar.
Yeah, I'd feel a little bit better if they had Kopitar. But they got Williams back. And yeah. The Sharks are the Sharks.
Yeah. Douglas Murray in this series?
That's right.
Kevin Westgarth in this series? A little Ivy League love.
Maybe we should root for Kings v. Anaheim.
For the Princeton non-Princeton violence?
Yeah. Westgarth versus Peros.
I guess they fought last week, the last regular season game.
A lot has been made about the fact that there are three California teams in the playoffs and only two Canadian teams. Just dawned on me that I picked those two Canadian teams to face each other in the finals. Man, do I sound like a Canadian homer. Oh, well, I can live with that. I grew up 6 miles from Manitoba. I'm allowed.
Montreal looked good tonight. I know that.
I know the seeding is such that Montreal is considered the underdog, but I looked at that and I just said, you know what? I think Montreal wins that series. And I think probably pretty quickly. Short series.
Yeah, just Boston a hunch. Standing around a lot tonight.
Yeah, Boston didn't have any good chances, really. It was pretty clinical playoff hockey from the Habs. And the fact that Boston doesn't really have any talent.
So. Yeah. Yeah,
I haven't seen the Bruins a lot, but watching them tonight, you know, they get down, and it was like, okay, who are the big guns you call on to rally you here? And it's like, looking at that roster, going, there's not a lot there.
Yeah,
you know, their whole offense seemed to be centered on Chara blasting away from the point,
right?
And then he put about 80 pucks right into Carey Price's chest.
The CH means shoot it in my chest.
It's on a bullseye? What are you talking about?
I saw a term, I think it was on Twitter tonight, someone said they called that a logo blaster. I love that term.
Oh, that was Chara tonight. Big Z'd.
put it right in the middle of the sweater.
What, No, never mind.
Come on.
I was going to ask a question that I cannot recall what the question was right now.
You can't tease us with what and then just bail out.
I did.
All right.
That's all right. Pull the chute before it's a...
Hey, yeah, you made a Liza Minnelli reference tonight. You win some kind of prize for that.
That is true.
Oh, no.
Oh, I remember what it was.
Can you say Liza Minnelli on a podcast?
Oh, you can.
Nope. .com.
Did, Bus, do we want to mention the famous, distinctive, tremendous artwork that's displayed in the cafeteria of the XL Energy Center? Highlight of, among the, well, one of the highlights.
Well, there's actually two highlights. First is one of the pictures in the XL Energy Center, as with most arenas.
Yeah.
You know, around the building, you'll see blown up shots of various events that have taken place in the building. I think there might have been a Paul McCartney one.
Yeah.
In the media dining area, and you know, the press box had a bunch of wild photos.
It's a really big one of Anna Kournikova.
Yeah, I saw that one.
That was my favorite picture in the dining area until picture from the state tournament.
From the Minnesota State High School hockey tournament featuring Gladys Roseau Rams.
My Rams.
Against my Grand Rapids Indian Thunderhawks.
There you go.
In the state championship game from probably 4 or 5 years ago.
Yep.
And Roseau was winning. And
pleased to meet a lot of people from Roseau last week.
You're going to get an honorary
degree. I'm going to get an honorary degree from Roseau High School.
A lot of people asking you, so when did you live there?
Exactly.
For people who don't know, you know, Gladdy talks about his Rams all the time, and I grew up 20 miles away, so I had somebody I know from Roseau come up and ask me, this is maybe 6 months ago, so this Gladdy, when did he live in Roseau?
Not that in a town of 1,200 people you wouldn't notice when somebody named Gladyshevsky moved in.
Yeah.
Right.
And you know me, always staying out of the spotlight.
You wouldn't, like, your name wouldn't show up in the Roseau Gazette or whatever it's called.
The Roseau, what's it called? The Roseau Times?
Times Picayune?
It's something like that. Roseau Times Region, that's it. The Roseau Times Region.
I knew that.
Not to be confused with the rival paper to the War Road Pioneer.
Oh. Throw the records out the window when those mastheads get together.
Ink is spilled. So what kind of honorary degree do you get from high school?
Oh. Like a
GED of laws or
no, of just letter? Just there it is, Roseau, honorary graduate. So, all right.
You'd stand out if you moved there just because they'd say, Gladyshevsky, that's the weirdest Swedish Lutheran name I've ever heard.
Yeah, exactly. So, all right. Any last call?
Was that deterioration?
It was deterioration.
I think once Liza Minnelli enters the conversation, we've deteriorated.
I think I heard our boat scrape the reef there.
Are we going to get any fog in the NHL playoffs this year? That's one of the great things of spring. Maybe in Tampa, I suppose.
Only if they rebuild the odd.
Only if Sidney Crosby tries to come back too soon.
Oh, jeez. He's got fog already.
That's what I'm saying.
His melon.
Concussion jokes, wow.
Yeah, you know us, Jess.
That's always right.
Mindful and sensitive.
Always taking the high road.
Sidney Crosby, he gone.
He gone. All right.
I thought you would drop some master's knowledge on us.
I saw zero meaningful shots of the Masters. I mean, it was on a little bit in the media work area at a TV with no sound about 60 feet from where I was sitting. So I could look up and see that it was on, but nothing more than that.
His name was Charles.
That is true. That is true.
Not to be confused with Charo.
Correct. South African.
Who, Charo?
No. Charo. Masters win.
So. Luke Donald had a nice showing. Bad for him.
Dude on tour made a 15 today. Did you guys see that?
Yeah, on a 4.
On a par 4.
On a par 4.
So. I thought it was... what was the guy's name?
Anthony Na. Kevin Na. Sorry, Kevin Na.
And what was the tournament?
I believe like the Colonial they are in Texas. Valero Texas Open maybe this week.
and he took a 15 on a 4.
Yeah, I read about it. Did you read how it happened?
I saw the headline. I figured John Daly had to be involved somehow.
I got the play-by-play. His first tee shot was unplayable. His second tee shot landed in almost the identical spot, and they tried to get it out. I guess it was a thorny, wooded brush area that was still in play. It wasn't OB. But he had the unplayable. Then he tried to whack it out left-handed. That didn't work. Then he tried to whack it out right-handed about 4 times. That didn't work. Oh, no, he had a second unplayable, and he took a drop. That was 2 more shots. And then he finally whacked it out in his 13th, advanced it out to the fairway. He actually made...
Then he chipped.
He made up and down for a 15.
So at that point, 15. At that point, aren't you just like...
He canceled his Friday night hotel room.
Oh, man. Yeah, that's terrible.
Yeah. Poor guy. I guess he's not from some of the golf tweets I was reading today from some golf writers I follow. I guess he's not really held in high regard in the room.
Oh, really?
So I'm sure a lot of guys are making some pretty good jokes tonight. So, all right, boys. Last call. Wrap it up. Anything?
I'm good. Yes.
Thanks for coming to Minnesota. We had a blast.
It was a great, great week.
Let me just say on a soapbox here, and this is something else I heard from Don Lucia. They really have to set up some kind of rotation. You know, a venue like this one, a venue like Boston, you know, some of these great places we've had the Frozen, you got to have a regular rotation. So it's not 9 years between, you know, returning to a place like this. I just think, yeah, sure, mix in a Pittsburgh or a Tampa or a Columbus every now and then, but it just seems to me that, you know, hey, if the basketball tournament can go to Indianapolis about every other year.
Yeah, San Antonio, Indy.
Yep.
Yeah.
Makes sense to me that the places where it works, let's keep it coming there.
All right. Boss?
I don't need to go to Boston. I like Boston. It's a fine town.
I love Boston.
It's a train wreck as a trying to get around that joint.
Yep.
The train didn't wreck when I was on it.
Yeah.
You can shut that city down with a light bright.
That's a good point.
Just saying.
All right. Anything else, Buzz?
Nope.
I'll wrap it up with a shout out to the Twin Cities. Can't wait to get back there. Enjoyed my time there in the past, you know, 2002 and another business trip I once made. But being able to spend some time there, both in the St. Paul Rink area, River Center area, as well as the University of Minnesota campus. Two thumbs up from Gladdy. So, have to get back out there. Maybe in football season. So.
Well, I got a team now.
Well, sort they of. Play Syracuse and Michigan State in the near future, so I could be convinced to make those road trips. Not at the same time.
No. 2 months between games would.
All right, one last live score update. LA has tied it. Goal by Justin Williams. It's 2-2 now. Late second.
Do we have a score?
Oh, you should have dropped the yay right there.
Tune in to tomorrow's podcast and we'll have score updates.
So, we'll have the final on the next podcast. Podcast cliffhanger.
We'll name 3 stars. In case you were wondering,
always Campus give him a 3 stars of the game.
Always give him a reason to come back.
That's exactly right.
Yeah, find out the game next podcast for the exciting conclusion of LA and San Jose. All right, for Jess Myers and Mike Idlebus, I am Joe Gladyszewski. Thank you for listening to the Inch Podcast. Come on. We need the yay.
I hit it.
I heard it way off in the distance.
Give me another yay.
That one was even quieter.
It's not coming.
Well.
All right. It was a little better.
Good all enough.
Right. We'll go with that. How about we all do it together?
One, two, three.
Yay!